Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter Interior Paint is a paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter Paint and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Well, hello there. I'm Otis Gyre, and somehow you've found your way to my backyard, where we have a nice fire going, and we're sharing some tales that just might give you some apprehension. Nightmare fuel, if you will. But that's okay. We won't scare you too much. It's okay. Come on in. Settle in. Get a stick and a marshmallow or a wiener and roast it over the fire while I relate some tales to get you through the night. Enjoy yourself.
Well, well, good evening, campers. Welcome to Camp Dustwood, here on the shores of tranquil Twilight Lake. The name's Otis Gyre, and I reckon I've been around these parts for longer than most of you have been alive. Used to be the camp director here, but that was many, many years ago. Now I just come by to spin a good yarn or two by the fire. Stories? I got plenty of them, and they're best shared with company. Now, let's see who we have here tonight. What's your name, young man? Ryan, is it? Well, Ryan, glad you could join us. And you there, what's your name? Jenny. Welcome, Jenny. And it looks like Jenny brought a friend along. What's your name, young lady? Janice. Good to meet you, Janice. Hope you enjoy the stories tonight. And all of you, remember, you're welcome back next week. Bring along more friends. I have plenty of tales to share. Now, as I was saying, when I was a young fella, folks were afraid of all sorts of things. Shadows, things that go bump in the night. But over time, you learn it's not always the howling wolves or dark forests that'll get you. Sometimes it's the quiet lurking things that slip under the covers or out from the walls when you least expect them. All right, then. Let's get started. Tonight, I've got two tales that might just make you look twice at the places you think are safe. The first one, Black Mold, that's about a kid named Tommy who finds out that basements aren't just for storage. And after that, well, let's just say white sheets might seem a little less harmless once you've heard Sheet Ghost. Now, let's settle in, shall we? The first story comes from an old friend of mine, J.M. Sinamo. It's about a boy named Tommy and a basement that's more than just dark and damp. Here's Black Mold. Tommy Oman was only 7 years old when his parents bought the house on Tamara Lake. Though it was no mansion by any stretch of the imagination, the 5-bedroom raised ranch-style home seemed like a palace compared to the 1-bedroom studio apartment he and his parents had lived in prior. His dad loved to brag about the size of the new house. He said that it even had a finished basement. "I thought the whole house was finished," Tommy said, confused by the term. And his father laughed. Yes, Tommy, he replied. The whole house is finished. It just means the basement is set up to use as an activity room, a den, or even bedrooms. Tommy gasped. You mean I have to sleep in the basement? This idea clearly upset him, and his protest continued until his mother interrupted. Of course not, sweetie. She assured him in a low, soothing tone. You can pick which room you want as yours. His eyes lit up. Before he had a chance to respond, he was cut off by his dad, except the master bedroom. Tommy let out a disapproving "mph." He hated that his father always seemed to know what he was thinking. He figured that was just one of the perks of being a grown-up. As they stepped through the front door, Tommy squealed with delight. He dashed off through the living room, into the kitchen, and down the main hall to look at the rooms. Though the size of the master bedroom was impressive, he was equally satisfied with the other two rooms on the main floor. He returned to the hall and pointed at a door that sat just off the kitchen. What's that? Is that the basement? His dad nodded. Tommy turned the knob and slowly opened the door. He was greeted by a wooden staircase that plunged downward into a dark, wide-open room. He turned to his parents, fear painted across his innocent face. It's okay, just turn on the light. The switch should be on the left wall. Show me your left. Tommy lifted his left hand slowly. His parents smiled and nodded encouragingly. He slowly slid his hand along the wall until he felt the switch. With a click, the light above the stairs came on, forcing the darkness to retreat. Tommy gave a weak smile, then carefully began to descend the stairs. The basement was much larger than he'd expected, and far less scary with the lights on. The main room was the length of the entire first floor, big enough to run around in or even play a game of tag. Two bedrooms sat against one of the longer walls, with a small half-bedroom between them. As Tommy marveled at the size of the basement, he was startled by loud footsteps on the stairs behind him. I thought the basement was supposed to be finished, his mother said with disappointment in her voice. The walls are just bare cinder block, and the floor isn't even carpeted. Only the main room needs carpeting. The bedrooms are carpeted, and the bathroom's ready to go. And I like the cinder block walls. Gives it a certain vibe. His father responded, placing a reassuring hand on her shoulder. His mother scoffed. Yeah, like a dungeon. Tommy laughed. Sure, the concrete floor and gray cinder block walls weren't exactly homey, but the space definitely made up for it. Tommy peeked his head into one of the small rooms. I like it down here, he said excitedly. Can this be my room? His parents looked at him with a mixture of confusion and shock. Come on, he pleaded. This room could be my bedroom, and this one can be like a game room, Tommy explained, walking through the adjoining bathroom. I'm a big boy now, and this way I can make noise, play video games, and have friends over, and practice karate, and his parents started chuckling. His mother gave him a comforting smile. Okay, okay. If you really like it, then I guess we can give it a shot. If you change your mind, we could always move you to an upstairs room. Tommy gave his mom and dad a big hug. Hey, Tommy began, as he looked toward the far corner of the main room. What's that? He pointed his tiny index finger at a large rebar grate on the floor. His dad walked over to it and peered inside. Looks like an old drainage gate. Bone dry in there now. Must have been used to drain water from the basement during construction, before it was flood-proofed. Don't worry, though. The realtor said they sealed it up real good, like a submarine. Tommy giggled. He loved submarines and boats. With a thumbs up, his dad reassured him this would be the best room in the house. That first winter was very trying for Tommy and his family. Repeated snowstorms brought over 5 feet of snow, and temperatures dipped well below zero. Of course, these conditions bothered his parents much more than they did him. Even though he couldn't play outside due to the winter advisory that was in effect, the schools were close and he got to stay in and play video games with his neighbor and new best friend, Ryan Fisher. He was slightly older than Tommy, and though the age difference was only a couple of months, Ryan loved to rub it in Tommy's face. However, Tommy didn't pay attention to any of his teasings. In fact, he thought this behavior only showed that even though Ryan was older, he wasn't any more mature. "So, what made your parents buy a haunted house?" Ryan asked, never taking his eyes off the video game they were playing. "What do you mean haunted?" "It's not haunted," Tommy protested, having lived in a supposedly haunted house for several months. Ryan shrugged, eyes still glued to the TV screen. "People say it's haunted. They say the last guy who lived here liked to lure kids down to the basement with candy, and then he would kill and eat them. They say he killed himself when he heard the police were coming to get him, and..." "Oh!" Ryan shouted and lunged at Tommy, causing him to let out a high-pitched yelp and drop his controller. He punched Ryan in the arm and began using words that surely would have gotten him grounded if his mother heard him say them. That night, at the dinner table, Tommy decided to break the usual silence with his newfound information. "Ryan says our house is haunted." His parents stopped eating and waited for him to continue. "He says a bad man used to live here and he ate the kids in the basement." Naturally, his parents were mortified at what the neighborhood kids said about their house. "Sweetie," his mom said, placing a hand on his arm, "that's just a scary story the neighborhood kids made up to frighten you. The house isn't haunted. No one that lived here ate people. Isn't that right, dear?" Tommy's dad nodded in agreement. "It's right. The realtor said the house has been foreclosed after the original owner had passed away." Tommy gasped at the thought of someone dying here. "It's okay, T. The realtor said he was an old man. It was just his time to go. Nothing to be scared of." Tommy believed his parents, but still felt uneasy about the house, especially the basement. "Can I move my room to one of the upstairs rooms?" he asked with a hint of fright in his voice. His parents nodded and told him he could use the guest bed until they moved his things up from the basement. When the spring came, the warm weather brought more than the usual birds, flowers, and insects. The enormous snow mounds that had built up over the previous winter had melted into a deluge of water, causing Tommy's entire street to flood. It was then that he and his family found out their finished basement would not live up to its title. One afternoon, as Tommy opened the basement door to get his skateboard and helmet, he found himself staring at several feet of water instead of the bottom of the staircase. The water was dark, smelled of mildew, and appeared thick and viscous. "Dad!" Tommy yelled down the hall. "The basement's flooded!" Tommy's dad came running down the hall. When he saw the swamp that sloshed lazily at the base of the stairs, he unleashed a tirade of swears and curses directed at no one in particular, save maybe the basement itself. Tommy's mom rushed in when she heard the yelling and told her son to go outside and play while they get the situation sorted out. He agreed and quickly hurried out into the yard to play. Thankful he had moved his bedroom upstairs when he did. After several days of plumbers, home inspectors, and insurance agents coming and going, coupled with his father yelling at what he called the rat bastard realtor, the basement was finally water-free. The inspector told Tommy's parents the original seal had been a slapdash job, and the new seal should keep the water out for the coming years. Before he left, he cautioned they may experience some mold issues, but to give him a call and they would send someone out to handle it. They thanked him and the rest of the workers for doing a quick job and hoped that that would be the end of it. Not long after the flooding and repairs, Tommy was woken from a sound sleep by the faint scratching noise at his bedroom door. He quickly snapped on his bedside light and looked all around his room. He was alone, but the scratching sound persisted. He slowly crept out of bed and placed his ear near the heating vent in the carpet. It was then he realized it wasn't scratching he was hearing. It was whispering. Tommy! The voice rasped like the sound of dry leaves scraping on pavement. Tommy, please, come down here. I want to meet you. Tommy was frozen with terror, but mustered all of his courage to respond. Who are you? He asked, voice trembling, the whispering returned. I'm a genie. The voice lied. I was trapped down here until the water set me free. So I have wanted to meet you and your family. I've listened to you for months, hoping I would be set free so I could grant you wishes. Tommy's uneasiness began to wane. Come downstairs so I can grant you wishes. Tommy grabbed his flashlight and made his way down the hall. He carefully approached the basement door. He reached out with his tiny hand, placed it on the knob, and slowly opened the door. As the hinges squealed and groaned, the batteries in his flashlight died. Tommy let out an audible yelp, then quickly cupped his free hand over his mouth. He peered into the inky blackness of the basement, too scared to descend the stairs or even reach for the light switch in the wall. In the darkness, he swore he saw a shape moving at the base of the stairs. As his eyes adjusted, the shape appeared to be a person, swaying back and forth like a tree caught in a light breeze. Tommy swallowed hard as the shadowy figure lazily lolled from side to side. Then the unthinkable happened. The shadow took a step. Tommy screamed as the figure moved slowly up to the next step, still swaying side to side. Without warning, the light above him flashed on and the shadow had vanished. Tommy! His dad's voice boomed from behind him. Tommy screamed and quickly turned to face him. What are you doing out of bed, son? Tommy was taking increasingly deep breaths. He raised his arm and pointed to the bottom of the stairs, not daring to turn and face what might still be lurking below. His father looked past him and gave an exasperated sigh. Tommy turned to see what was wrong and why he wasn't running in terror. On the wall at the bottom of the stairs was a large black stain. Great. Just what we needed. His father let out another sigh. Mold. Come on, Tommy. Get back to bed. We'll deal with this in the morning. As Tommy followed his father back down the hall, he glanced back, filled with dread. His father didn't see it, but he did. The mold wasn't only on the wall. There were two dark stains on the two most bottom stairs as well. The next day, Tommy told Ryan what had happened.
Dude, you're full of crap.
Ryan explained, that story I told you is something we all tell the new kid to scare them. There's no ghost or genie or whatever in your basement. The old dude that lived here just croaked. Don't be such a baby.
It's true, Tommy argued back. I can prove it.
Tommy walked with Ryan over to the basement and swung the door open. What do you call that? Tommy asked.
triumphantly pointing at the dark spot on the wall. Mold, you dingus. All the houses have it after flooding. Tommy pointed his finger at the stairs. What about those footprints? Explain that. Tommy said, challenging his assertion. Ryan shook his head slowly. It's still just mold, dude. Tommy was starting to get angry. His parents hadn't believed his story either and dismissed the shadowy creature as a nightmare. Ryan flicked on the overhead light and started down the stairs. Come on, Tommy. Let's find this basement genie. Before Tommy could stop him, Ryan had already disappeared into the basement. Tommy quickly caught up with his friend, who was now standing in the far corner near the drainage grate. Ryan gestured at the floor surrounding it. Dark, greenish, black spots encircled the small opening and the surrounding walls. See, dude? Mold. It sucks, but it's just mold. Before Tommy could argue, the two of them were startled by a loud bang. The basement door had swung shut. Tommy ran back to the steps to see if maybe one of his parents had accidentally closed it, not knowing they were down there. But before the word mom could escape his lips, the basement light blew with a sharp pop. Come on, Tommy, this isn't fun. Ow! Ryan's words were cut short by a blood-curdling scream. Tommy squinted in the darkness, too frightened to move from the base of the steps. He stared at the far corner as unimaginable fear washed over him in waves. Even without the light, he could make out the horrible scene that was unfolding before him. The shadowy figure had returned and was wrapped around Ryan, only this time it looked far less human than the night before. Numerous limbs, claws, and tendrils groped, slapped, and squeezed its friend until the screaming stopped. Tommy saw the shadows lower his friend's limp body to the floor. Tommy! The shadows whispered. I'm still hungry. Tommy! The dark mass shambled toward him, twitching and chuckling. Will you feed me, Tommy? Will you bring me more food? Tommy began to sob. He knew that this was the end. He knew this creature would squeeze the life out of him like it did Ryan, and then it would get his parents. He closed his eyes and braced himself. What the hell are you kids doing down here? His father yelled from the stairs, flashlight in hand. Didn't I say it wasn't safe to be down here because of the mold? He didn't finish his sentence. Tommy's dad cupped a hand over his mouth. His tears began to form in his eyes. Oh my God, Ryan! Tommy, what happened? What did you do? The shadows had retreated once again. Tommy ran to his father and wrapped his arms around him, hot tears stinging in his eyes. It was the mold, Dad. It was the mold. The coroner's report had ruled Ryan's death an accident. They said it appeared he had suffocated from an intense allergic reaction from the mold spores in the Omen's basement. They said that situations like this were rare, but not unheard of in young children. Ryan's parents, however, did not accept this explanation. Instead, they took their sadness and frustration out on Tommy and his family. This is all his fault, Ryan's mother screamed through tears, pointing an accusatory finger at Tommy. That little bastard did something to him. You're sick. Your whole family is sick. Mr. Fisher tried to calm his wife down, but the same pained, judgmental look lingered on his face. Honey, he began. Not here. Not like this. Ryan's closed casket sat just a few feet away on a small white altar adorned with flowers, stuffed animals, and photos of the now deceased boy. Tommy hid behind his parents and burst into tears, his small voice trembling. It was the monster, mold monster, Mrs. Fisher.
Tommy struggled to get the words out. The sudden loss of his best new friend gripped him in fear and anxiety that would not shake loose. Mrs. Fisher approached the Illmans, hatred and pain in her eyes. The only monster is you. Now get out! Out! With that, the funeral director approached the Illmans and firmly asked them to leave. After Ryan's funeral, things only got worse for Tommy and his parents. The voices and shadows had stopped, but his fear of their return kept him awake most nights. One evening, when he should have been sleeping, he heard his parents arguing in the living room. Tommy's mother wanted to sell the house and move. "We can't stay here," she pleaded. "The mold is dangerous, and Tommy's terrified. His best friend died down there." His father met her concerns with anger. "We just can't leave. We've sunk so much money into this goddamn house. And who's going to buy it after a little boy just died here, huh? I had that shit in the basement cleaned best I could, and I filled that damn drainage grate with cement. What more do you want from me?" "What about our son?" she screamed. "Don't you give a shit about him? He won't sleep. He barely eats. He won't even go near the basement. He's traumatized." Tommy's dad paced back and forth, hands covering his face. "Fine, fine. Then take him to therapy. Get him some help. He's obviously all screwed up. I told them not to play in that damn basement. Do whatever you want, but I'm not leaving." His mother grabbed her coat and stormed down the hall to Tommy's room. "Get up, sweetie," she said lightly, shaking Tommy's shoulder. "We're going to go stay with Aunt Linda and Uncle Steve." Tommy slipped on his shoes, took his mother's hands, and the two of them drove off into the night. Tommy didn't see much of his father after that fight. He and his mother stayed with his aunt and uncle until they were able to find an affordable townhouse. For the first few years after his parents separated, his father would come and visit a few times a year. But the constant bickering with his ex-wife made his visits less and less frequent, until one day they stopped altogether. Tommy attended therapy at the behest of his mother and school guidance counselor to help cope with what he had witnessed in the basement. After years of therapy, he eventually came to terms with Ryan's death being a freak accident caused by a severe anaphylactic shock. True, he still had his fear of basements, sewer grates, and mold, but he tried not to let it interfere with his day-to-day life. The visions and voices all seemed to vanish the night he and his mother left that moldy old house. Now 18, Tommy had decided to leave the townhouse he and his mother had called home for the past 11 years and rent his own small place in the city. His new apartment was barely bigger than the living room of the townhouse he just left, but it was closer to campus and he could even walk to work if he had to. One evening, as he was just getting in from work, the weather took a terrible turn. Rain had been hammering down for hours. The gutters below Tommy's apartment filled with rushing water and debris. This type of weather always made him anxious. Thunder boomed just above, shaking his windows. He closed his eyes and tried to tell himself it was just a storm. As the noise from the growing storm raged on, his mantra was broken by the sound of his cell phone. The phone jingled to life with a number he didn't recognize. Tommy nervously pressed the accept button. "Hello?" Tommy speaking. There was a pause. He heard someone on the other end breathing heavily. "Tommy, it's Dad. I know it's been a long time since we last spoke, but I heard you moved to your own place and were going to college, and I just wanted to see how you were." Tommy sat silent for what felt like an eternity. There were so many things he wanted to say to him, wanted to shout at him. He took a deep breath and closed his eyes. Yeah, I'm fine, Dad. Thanks. Been busy. Keeping busy. Work, school, you know. He heard his dad chuckle on the other end. It had been so long since he heard his father's laugh that he forgot how soothing it could be. You sound so big now, T. I'm sorry I let time get away from me like that. I should have been there for you, and I wasn't. I hope I can make it up to you, son. Anyway, I have some news you might like to hear. I know how much you hated that old house after your friend Ryan passed away. Well, I just heard from our old realtor that they tore it down to make way for condos or something like that. Isn't that great? Tommy felt his heart sink. Tore it down? Even the basement? Tommy asked, fear causing the hairs in the back of his neck to prickle. Yeah, even the basement. Great, right? Before Tommy could respond, his living room light flickered and went out. The room filled with a wet and rotted odor as the vague shadows began to shift around him. Dad, Tommy nervously whispered into the receiver. They let it out. They broke the cement in the grate and they let it out, Dad. His eyes darted around the room, bone still pressed to his ear. The silhouette seemed to dance and weave on every move he made. Tommy, calm down, okay? We've been over this. There's nothing in that basement that can hurt you. His father's words were cut short. He pulled the phone away from his ear. The screen was blank. Dark. Dead. Panicked, he bolted for the door. Tommy! Where are you going? Tommy! The whispered voice of the shadows asked from just in front of his only means of escape. Something was different this time. This time the shadows had more than one voice that was speaking in unison. Ryan? Ryan, is that you? Tommy choked out between stunted breaths. We're hungry again, Tommy. We haven't eaten in years. You're going to feed us. Tommy, you're going to feed us. The engulfing darkness slithered through the air, wrapping Tommy in their damp embrace. The stench of mold and decay filled his nose. The inky blackness wriggled and squirmed in and out of his mouth. The shadows blanketed his eyes and filled his ears until all fell dark and silent. Tommy's father came bursting through the front door of the small apartment. He knew he hadn't been the best dad, but he had to see what had happened to his son when he heard the panic and fear in his voice. He needed to be sure that everything was going to be okay. But it wasn't okay. Nothing was okay. In the small beam of light that trickled into the apartment from the outside hall, he saw the lifeless form of what used to be his little boy sprawled on the floor. He rushed over and held his son's body in his arms. Silent, weak sobs escaped from him as he rocked back and forth, trying to make sense of what could have happened since they last spoke 3 hours ago. The door to the apartment slowly creaked shut, extinguishing what little light the hall had offered. A damp, moldy smell crept into the room. Tommy's father began to cough and cough on the noxious odors that now seemed to surround him. He raised his head and peeked over the shoulder of his son's corpse. On the other side of the room, the shadows bobbed and weaved from side to side. The squirming mass of darkness lolled toward him. Dad, we're hungry. Oh, well, campers, it seems like basements aren't quite as cozy as they're cracked up to be. Tommy just thought he was dealing with some leaky pipes. Turns out there's a lot more waiting for him down there. You know, my old house had a basement that I never felt comfortable going into, especially when the lights were out. But that's a story for another day. Ryan, what about you? Ever been in a basement like that? No? Well, lucky you. And Jenny, think you'd ever stay in a place with creepy spots in the walls? I didn't think so. And Janice, what about you? Yeah, I'd probably be spooked too if I were in Tommy's shoes. All right then, let's move on to our next tale. This one's got a bit of mystery and a touch of the bizarre. Ever see one of those cartoon ghosts covered in a white sheet? Well, after hearing this one, you might think twice before laughing at them again. Our next story comes from Chris Wolf, who has been known to also answer to the name Slime Beast. Boy, is that name appropriate. The man sure knows how to take something harmless and make it, well, unsettling. He certainly earned his nickname. Anyway, here's one of his tales. This one about a boy, a hospital stay, and let's just say things don't quite go as planned. Here's Sheet Ghost. Have you ever seen a sheet ghost? You know, the generic hovering spook dressed in a white sheet with eye holes? You've only seen them on television and movies, right? Charlie Brown dressed as one. Mystery Inc. unmasked one on an episode of Scooby-Doo. However, actual ghost stories rarely adopt this image. Real ghosts, if you believe in them, usually take the form of boring orbs of light or plain old humans. People laugh at the idea of a cartoon ghost fluttering about, but at least it's a touch more creative than some random semi-transparent person. So what would you say if I told you I've seen a sheet ghost? Oh, maybe you chuckled a bit when I said that. Maybe you shook your head disapprovingly. And you're about to stop listening. I'd advise against it. When I'm done, you might find yourself just a little more wary of sheet-clad specters than you were before. When I was 15, I fractured both my forearms. Up until that point in my life, I displayed that sense of immortality older folks always accuse teens of having. I behaved like I was invincible, which led to a skateboard jump that probably looked amazing for about 3 seconds. Then I threw my arms out in front of me to stop the oncoming pavement. The gruesome twin pops told me everything I needed to know before the runaway train of agony it traveled to my brain. After my friends were through freaking out, a call to 911 had me in the back of an ambulance and on my way to the Holcomb County Hospital. You know how it went from there. I was partially scolded by EMS workers for not wearing elbow or knee pads. Nurses in the emergency room told me I was fortunate not to have broken anything else, and so on. I tuned them out at the time, partially because I was an angsty teenager, and partially because I was in the worst pain I'd felt in my life. So far, at least. Luckily, only one wrist needed surgery. The other would heal itself over time. I found myself in double casts when I woke up after the procedure. I studied my arms and chuckled, declaring that I was the world's biggest lobster. A concept likely brought about by the medication. The stickers and writing on my cast told me that some of my dumbass friends had come by while I was still knocked out and had probably left out of boredom shortly thereafter. As my vision and my mind cleared, I read the scribblings out loud.
Glad you didn't die. Get well. You smell. Go to hell. I wasn't watching. Do it again. Classic stuff. The audible wheezing started while I was peeling off an arcade fire sticker. I didn't pay any attention to whoever was in bed next to me until that wheeze built into a rasping cough. After a few awkward moments of staring at the curtain dividing us, I couldn't take the guttural retching for any longer without speaking up angrily. "Dude," I commented. Admittedly, I was only concerned with how much the patient was grossing me out, but again, I was 15. "Dude, are you all right, or..." I asked, trailing off, so the whooping chain smoker could interrupt and tell me that they were fine. Instead, there was no answer, just noise. I leaned dangerously far off the bed, especially in my woozy state. I threw the curtain aside with a rough sweep of a nearly numb arm. The bed was empty. There was no second patient. Worse yet, I could still hear the gradual tapering off of a pathetic, barely audible wheeze. The bed wasn't just empty, it was pristine, covered with a perfectly crisp white sheet, and ready for the next person who needed a place to recover. I picked up the button to ring for a nurse as best as I could, and was about to smash it down with the other hand. All at once, feelings of embarrassment came over me as I realized my phantom roommate must have been another byproduct of the drugs. I put the button back down and laughed to myself as I studied the bare bed once again. Then, the sheet began to rise, feeling like an inflating lung drawing a slow, deep breath. I stared, confused at first, and then stupefied as it settled into the shape of a covered, motionless body. I fumbled for the call button again, jamming it rapidly. The draped figure sat up slowly from the bed, its rigid form staring forward and thankfully paying no attention to my presence. I stared in stunned silence as the figure slid from bed and stood, never dropping the sheet that draped back over its head. The body behind the sheet, as far as I could see, did not exist. I know what you're expecting at this point, and no, I didn't follow it. I sat there like a good boy and waited for the nurse to come in and tell me I was suffering from a pretty hardcore hallucination. I sat for minutes on end, watching as the cloaked figure stood facing the room's door, groaning loudly to itself. The sound was a droning, almost forlorn, "Ooh." It repeated the ominous noise again and again until I was completely convinced I'd lose my mind. If the stomach-gnawing dread didn't do me in, the soul-chilling din would. No one was coming. Somewhere, deep inside, I knew that for a fact. I didn't understand what was happening, but I was slowly coming to the realization that, yes, it was indeed happening. The silver doorknob got my attention. One groping turn, even with my useless club arms, would allow the thing to pass through the doorway, relieving me of its horrifying presence. So, I did it. I stood up, approached cautiously, and let it out. A jolt of terror electrified my nervous system as the sheet-covered non-entity unexpectedly turned and, with one sweeping motion, grabbed at my arm. Its face, that blank, expressionless face, indented in fabric, hung motionless before me. Even though there was no readable emotion on it, I could feel that the thing was taking full notice of me for the first time since it appeared. I backed away quickly, nearly stumbling over my own feet, as an empty bedsheet moved through the doorway. Relief washed over me as I nearly crumpled to the floor. My head felt light, and the beating of my racing heart stood up in my ears to replace the ghostly wail. The door creaked on its hinges, echoing in the silent hall beyond. There were no voices, no boops and beeps of medical equipment. Nothing but the groan gradually fading into the distance. I called out for help to anyone who could hear me. I was met with that same eerie silence. Cautiously poking my head out of the door, I could see the figure was a safe distance away, steadily shambling its way through a pair of push doors. I squinted at the signage near the end of the hall, and one word immediately stood out to me. Mortuary. The morgue. Yep, that was enough for me. I closed the door as quietly as possible, crept back to my bed, and tucked myself right in. I noped out of the situation in as calm and orderly a fashion as possible. I don't know if you've heard the term out of sight, out of mind, but I tried to live that phrase. Alone in the room once more, I decided I had indeed been hallucinating, and that absolutely nothing was out of the ordinary. Repeated glances to the bed next to me, now lying bare, defied my attempts to regain some shred of comfort. Its covering was gone. No matter how many times I looked away, closed my eyes, slowly counted to 10, and looked back. After a brief period of time that felt like an eternity, I decided that it had always been that way. I chuckled at the absurdity of imagining a made bed. I laid back, squeezed my eyes shut, and tried to force sleep. All that I could see, of course, was a certain white figure standing motionless in the pitch-black void behind my eyelids. I could try to fool myself, but the human mind doesn't let go of those images quite so quickly. A realization dawned on me, causing my eyes to pop open again. The nurse still hadn't come. I could deny everything else until fatigue eventually went out, and I slipped into a dream. But the fact that no one had answered the call button was an inarguable fact. I pressed it again, and then a third time. Nothing. For all I knew, I was alone, isolated in a strange second state of being, with only the memories of a phantom to keep me company. With the icy, bone-fingered grip of fright clasping my insides once more, I curled up in a fetal position and drew the blanket over my head. I had to shut the world out until it decided to behave properly and start making sense again. A new sound violated my ears. It was the most awful, maddening sound yet. An alarm rang out through the hospital, bringing to mind every doomsday scenario I'd ever seen in a disaster movie. The repeated digital squeal was wrong. It slowed down and warped, dragging each death knell out into the most obnoxious, garbled speech. I had to leave. Not just the bed, not just the room, but the entire hospital. The almost pleasant post-surgery numbness was giving way to a dull ache that would only grow more insufferable over time. I didn't care, though. I chose the pain over staying in that madhouse any day. The roar of the alarm grew louder as I moved my head from the pillow and then threw my blanket to the floor. Darkness, all that I could see of the room, were faded swaths of reality baked in the flickering red emergency lighting. I don't remember if I cried out, but I know I wouldn't have been able to hear myself over the din either way. I leaned against the wall and then made my way back to the door, pushing the lever down again and swinging it open with my foot. The hallway was just as confusing, Warning lights flickering in a weak attempt to lay out a path to safety. I kept to the wall as I moved through, pressing the casts against my ears to lessen the sensory overload. My brisk walk along the suggested route to the exit was halted when I realized where I was headed. The mortuary. The double doors were right in front of me, and I hadn't noticed until I was face to face with them. It made no sense. I thought that I must have gotten turned around, that no actual route of escape would lead deeper into the building. But the conclusion was clear. Even with the distractions around me, I knew I was being guided in the wrong direction. The lit path, the pointing exit signs, and even the floor plan affixed to the wall were directly lying to me. So naturally, the most sensible option was to turn around and do the exact opposite of what they said. I pivoted on my heels and sprinted in the other direction. I could feel my brow knotting up in confusion as I looked ahead. Through some deformity of time and space, I found myself once again headed toward the distant doors of the hospital morgue. Both ends of the hallway ended at the same location. No matter how rapidly I looked between them, both duplicates of the entrance remained firmly in place. I didn't need to get back to my room. I needed to get into any room. I had no idea what floor of the building I was on, but I knew I was going out of a window regardless. Flinging a random door open, I ducked through and in what should have been safety. Instead, I found that the door opened back into the same corridor with the same intimidating destination. The room number read 318. But the interior was a red-drenched hallway. Moving to the next door, I found 317 opened into the exact same space. So did 316, 315, and so on. I lost all hope at that moment. Either I was trapped in a nightmare I couldn't wake up from, or I was going to die from the throbbing stress of sight and sound that threatened to burst my heart and mind. Neither option looked good. Boom! The double doors flew open, thrown wide as they had been kicked out. In every direction, all around me, an inexplicable house of mirrors displayed nearly identical images. It was a dark figure, black in silhouette, as if to contrast the walking sheet I just got rid of. I say the figures were only nearly identical because as my maddened owl's gaze was fixed in each direction, I noticed difference in speed and movement. The reflections at every end of every hallway within view were deviating from their clones as they approached me from the very center. The figure hovered above the stark white hospital floor, and as it levitated toward me, I could see what it truly was. A body bag. Shredded from the knees down, wisps of plastic hanging in tatters. Neon yellow warning tape wrapped the vertical bag as if it had pressed its way through a cautionary web and became ensnared in the process. My hands moved from my ears to my eyes, letting the full blast of the alarm pierce my skull again. Blotting out the scene in front of me seemed much more important. Suddenly, silence. I knew what that meant, a moment of quiet, what it meant, and I feared it more than the noise. The thing, the body bag, had reached its prey. It stood directly in front of me. It stood all around me. It felt as if I could have suffocated in the middle of their reeking, stifling bodies. I dropped my arms to my side and let my head sink. There was nothing I could do. Nowhere I could run. Somewhere along the line, I'd passed from my own world into a parasitic twin dimension. I considered the idea that I might have suffered complications in surgery, and that I was already dead. I opened my eyes, first staring balefully at the perfectly lit tiles under my feet, then raising my view to the thing in front of me. While I wasn't looking, the world had corrected itself, though the upright body bag still remained. "What do you want from me, man?" I whispered in a barely audible voice. There was only one now, one gleaming dark form, its zippered face locked onto mine. Something spilled from beneath it, something wet, gelatinous and smelling of death. A single interwoven rope of entrails. The braided innards spasmed and whirled around each other, pulling themselves upward into the air like the searching tentacle of a sea monster. I gagged at the sight, my heaving stomach wanting nothing more than to uncontrollably spill its contents. The disgusting, spaghetti-like appendage wound itself around my arm. Despite my protests, I couldn't pull away. My screams fell on deaf ears. I could feel the decayed flesh of the thing working its way under the cast, popping stitches, violating the fresh incision on my wrist. I don't know if there was some sort of shared thought as it tried to merge with my tissue, or if my thoughts had simply cleared in a moment of fight-or-flight panic. Either way, I now knew exactly what it wanted from me. The same thing it had tried to grab back in the hospital room. It needed my hand. It needed the fresh, working part added to its conglomeration of meat, an appendage that wasn't locked in place by rigor mortis. It wanted open doors. Doors to other patients. Doors to other buildings. I shrieked again, pulling my arm away as hard as humanly possible, and falling to the floor in the process. The ripping of skin and tensing of sinew was unbearable. As I rolled on the floor in pain, a primal feeling took over. I couldn't die there. I couldn't die like that. I couldn't suffer whatever it wanted to do to me next. Wrapping the tentacle around my free arm, I brought it to my face and bit in. I ripped the fetid, slimy guts with my back teeth, gnawing them apart with the growl of a rabid dog. Spurts of blood and bile commingled on my face. When I had freed myself, I awkwardly crawled backward on my hands and heels. Another strand of innards emerged from beneath the attacker, and then another. It swept toward me through the air, appearing as if it was walking on six squid legs rather than floating as a proper ghost should. I scrambled to my feet and ran as the sloppy, slick sound of organs on marble fell rapidly behind me. Dodging quickly into a room, I slammed the door shut behind me and once again collapsed onto my back. This time, it was from relief instead of terror. Just outside, I could see the black plastic head and glinting zipper through a frosted glass window in the door. A moist slurping sound accompanied frustrated, fumbling half-turns of the doorknob. I spat a mixture of puke and bodily fluids at the floor. Then I lifted my shaking hand, the hand that it tried to take from me, and raised my middle finger. "This is all I'm giving you, bitch." I don't know exactly when or how I blacked out. There's a missing period of time between the enraged howl of the patchwork beast and the sound of nurses shouting at me. I awakened to a frenzied group of concerned faces as I was lifted from the place I'd fallen and placed back in my bed. I had spent the worst moments of my life with a ghost, a sheet ghost, no less. However, to the staff of the county hospital, nothing out of the ordinary happened. If you were to believe them, I rang for a nurse, and she immediately came to my room, where I had lost consciousness after biting into my own wrist. Chalk it up to a bad reaction to the medication if you want,
I guess.
There's one problem with that story, though. When my loser friends came around to visit again, I told them all about the dream I had. They were equal parts grossed out and enthralled. Especially Rat, the weird girl with a penchant for horror stories. It wasn't long after I told my tale that she chimed in with some unwelcome information. Apparently, there used to be a notable mortician on staff at that very hospital more than a decade ago. One who had a sick fascination with cutting out pieces of dead patients and doing God knows what with them. When he was caught lifting the liver of an organ donor, he was sentenced to a lengthy prison term. Newspapers labeled him the Morgue Man, and nearly 100 bodies were exhumed in an attempt to find the scope of his crimes. After everything came to light, the only time he was out of state custody was spent on a hospital bed due to a prison stabbing. He died soon after. That was likely to be the very same bed I had shared my room with. So, yeah, maybe you are still not afraid of sheet ghosts. They're just low-effect Halloween costumes and lazy creature designs, right? Me? I never want to see one again. And I hope you never see one at all. Well, now, that was a twist, wasn't it? You might think a ghost in a bedsheet's just a joke, until it turns around and stares you down. Makes you wonder what other ordinary things might be hiding a darker side. So what do you think, campers? Which one gave you the bigger shivers? Tommy's mold monster or that creepy sheet ghost? Ryan, you look like you're thinking about it. What about you, Jenny? And Janice, you too? Bet you'll all be looking over your shoulders tonight. Well, that's it for tonight. I'm glad you could all make it. Ryan, Jenny, and Janice, don't forget to come back next week and bring along more friends. I'll have plenty of stories to share. And there is always room around the campfire.